Welcome to video two of Open and Responsible Data Science Citizenship. I'm Louise Bezanek, and I'm going to be walking you through these slides. So in the last set of slides, we learned a bit more about responsible conduct of research and how it's changing the way we're thinking about the responsibilities of individual researchers and how they can best fit their research and their research conduct towards improving the beneficence towards not only their colleagues, but also society. However, it's important to recognize that since the digital revolution, the way research is being done is changing dramatically. It's changing not only the amounts and types of data that are being produced, it's also changing the way science is being practiced. We're seeing a massive increase in high performance computing. We're seeing a lot of cloud computing. We're seeing machine learning. We're seeing AI. And this is really putting pressure on what we think is good research and how responsible conduct of research is understood. And this has put us in an interesting position in terms of responsible conduct of research, because understandings of RCR in a digital age continue to evolve. And it's putting practitioners in this area in positions that they're having to confront not only how to extend existing discussions, but also how to deal with new areas of concern. And these include things such as the opportunity to share data using these cloud facilities versus the loss of control of data and the misuse of data. The massive amount of data recombination and reuse is increasing benefits of research for public, but it's also opening the avenues for possible harms coming from data misuse. The design of algorithms and the design of data systems can cause unintended marginalizations of certain populations or users. And data recombination and reuse can lead to massive unexpected consequences that the researchers still have to deal with. So as I said, this is raising new questions for RCR. These questions include, how can the evolving power of digital technologies be harnessed to uphold the principles of responsible research? How can the practices and structures of scientific research be adapted to ensure the research benefits the most number of people? How can the culture of science be adapted to support this evolution into these new and very exciting areas? And what is the role of the individual scientist, of the institution, the nation, and the infrastructure in this revolution? So basically, how do we ensure that we create presents and futures in research that uphold ethical principles and allow for research with integrity? So in order to pass this out a bit more, I'm going to talk about some areas that have really come to the fore in discussions about responsible conduct of research. And the first is the reproducibility crisis. Now, this phrase reproducibility crisis might be familiar to some of you. Actually, probably most of you will have heard it in some way or another. The reproducibility crisis relates to this increasing awareness that many of the experiments and research projects that are published cannot be reproduced, either by the researchers who created the data or by someone else who wants to reproduce the methodologies. The images on the slide are from a Nature survey of 1,500 researchers that was published in 2016. And they were asking scientists whether they failed to reproduce not only their own results or someone else's results. And you'll see across the fields of research, chemistry, biology, physics, medicine, earth and environmental sciences, and other, around 50% of researchers were saying, yes, they've struggled to reproduce someone else's research, but also to reproduce their own research. This concern about reproducibility was exacerbated by the awareness that even when they weren't reproducing the data and reproducing the methodologies to produce data, if they were using the same data and just conducting an analysis, they often reached different conclusions from analyzing the same set of data. And this really scared the entire research community, because people started to question whether the amount of information given in the methodology, whether the amount of information given about the analysis, whether the amount of annotations of the data were sufficient, and whether we were actually leading ourselves into a situation where we couldn't trust data that was being published. The same survey asked a very straight question, saying, is there a reproducibility crisis within research? And over half of the respondents, that's 750 of the 1,500 researchers, said, yes, there's a significant crisis. And a further 38% said, yes, there is a slight crisis. They wouldn't say it's significant, but at least there's a slight crisis. Only 10% of the respondents said either that they didn't know whether there was a crisis or that there was no crisis at all. And this is a very shocking realization and a very compelling result of the survey. So what the survey was really highlighting was that the variability in analysis and methodology was causing huge problems in reproducing research. This was not only because of the stylized way of reporting analysis and data production, but also because there's an increasing incentive within research towards publication and not reproducibility. So researchers are being put under increasing pressure to publish research, to publish novel research, and they do not have the same credit being allocated towards reproducing research or by reproducing either their own or other people's. It also highlighted the fact that there is a lack of transparency and access to data that's massively problematic if you wanted to go back and check the results of a specific experiment. In addition to the reproducibility crisis, there has been increasing scrutiny by the general public of the amount of money being pushed into research. So what was happening was that an increasingly science literate public is not only engaging in research results, so they're reading more research, they're actually participating in research through citizen science. And because of this, they're starting to talk about whether or not they should be funding certain types of research or whether certain types of research were not supposed to be funded. So there's an increasing scrutiny on the amount of money that individual governments or national funders are investing in research and whether the research is not only accessible to the public, but of the quality and of the areas that the public would like. There are also a number of new ways and places of knowledge production that are really changing the way we're thinking about research. So things like big data, AI, social data, citizen science, and an increasingly blurred boundary between academia, commerce, and government are all changing the ways we're thinking about research and changing the ideas of who is a researcher and who is not a researcher. And finally, the advent of the Sustainable Development Goals in the early 2000s has led a lot of conversations on research towards thinking about the bigger picture. People are starting to question whether research is contributing towards addressing these sustainable development goals and whether research that does not contribute to the sustainable development goals should be funded in the same way that key impactful research is being funded. Sorry about that. So all in all, these different areas are really sort of heralding the idea that maybe there's time for a new approach. We want to make sure that the research we're doing increases trust in science and doesn't waste public resources. We want to be able to have societies engaged with our science to get constructive feedback. We want to make sure we're international inclusive so that research is increasingly becoming a highly distributed practice. So we want to make sure that researchers around the world are able to participate in collaborations. And we want to increase the speed of discovery. So we have this amazing advance in computing and access to data. And this can speed up discovery if we manage it properly. So it would seem that what is needed to address the reproducibility crisis, to address public scrutiny on science, to address sustainable development goals and increase international collaboration is a need for more openness. We need openness not only in the research practices, but also openness in access to data, access to codes, and so forth. And while this might seem like it's a totally new thought, it's always very important to recognize that it's not new for research. There's a massive historical precedent for this argument. Openness has been a core value of science and research for a very, very long time. Since the first academic journal was published by the Royal Society in the 1600s, there has been a tradition of sharing and being open in research and being open in not only research findings, but research resources and research data. In 1942, Merton, who is a sociology of science, placed universalism and openness as one of the key values of scientific research. So therefore, we have a long tradition of sharing resources and scrutinizing work. And scientists will all agree that transparency of data, sharing of resources are key to addressing issues of reproducibility, networking, and public trust. But how this has been done over the years, of course, has been very ad hoc, and this has led us to issues such as the reproducibility crisis. So what seemed to be needed was not only encouragement towards more openness, but more strategic and carefully thought out pathways to openness. And this is how we come to open science. So open science is a massive movement that started about 20 years ago. That advocates for the products of scientific research to be freely available to everyone to use and republish as they wish, without restrictions from copyrights, patents, or other means of control. So open science is an umbrella term that includes activities that facilitate resource sharing, improve awareness of sharing, create linkages between resources, and advocate for the removal of financial barriers. So what open science is trying to aim to do is to make scientific research, data, and dissemination practices accessible to all levels of society. So open science is not only trying to ensure that researchers around the world have access to each other's data, but also that anyone who's interested in looking at that research, so members of civil society, members of commercial companies, members of NGOs and organizations, can also access the research data and the research products. And this will help facilitate advances in society and help society improve as science literate communities. So open science has a very broad scope. It advocates for transparency in experimental methodology, observation, and the collection of data. It advocates for the public availability and reusability of scientific data. It advocates for the public accessibility and transparency of scientific communication. And it advocates using web-based tools to facilitate scientific collaboration. So as you can see, that's a wide range of different things that open science is trying to do. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about how that translates into practice. But first, it's important to critically unpack what we mean by open. So open science advocates for the free access to research resources. But in English, free can mean two different things. It can mean gratis or libre. So gratis is as free means that there's no cost, and libre as free means at liberty. So the way to think about this in a very effective way is to think free speech and not free beer. Free beer relates to the gratis form of free, and it comes with a no strings attached. So if you're at a party and someone puts down beer and it's free beer, you're totally at liberty to take as much as you want for yourself. You can use it in any way you want. You can sell it on if you feel like it, or you can drink it all yourself. You have no obligations to share it with other people. You have no obligations to make sure that there's enough for everyone else to have access to. But also, it's important to recognize that it's a finite commodity. And once the beer is gone, the beer is gone. Free speech, as free as in libre, means at liberty. That means that you are at liberty to use the resources available. You're at liberty to modify the source, but libre means that it comes with some expectations of conduct. So you're not only free to use it, you also have to defend it for other people. So there's a reciprocal responsibility in libre that doesn't come in gratis. So libre can mean without restriction, but it always means that you have a responsibility to ensure that it is used by other people in the same way that you're using it yourself. So open science as a concept is advocating for the maximum accessibility of research resources. But this doesn't necessarily mean that open science is encouraging everyone to just open up all their data resources, put their lab books online, make all their research results open to everyone at all times. Of course, that's not possible, particularly in some areas like health science research, where you're working with medical data, or security research, where you're working with highly sensitive data. Sharing data and sharing source codes and sharing methodologies is perhaps more harmful than useful. So what open science is really advocating is the idea that you need to try and be as open as possible, but as closed as necessary. So as closed as necessary in order to uphold the norms that we were talking about in the previous video. So as closed as necessary to support beneficence, the ability to do good, and non-maleficence, the obligation not to cause harm. So as open science has evolved, it's seen the advent of a number of subgroups that are all united under this umbrella concept and this umbrella commitment towards openness. Open science in current terms means a number of interrelated movements. Open data, I think you'll be familiar with, open access publications, free and open source software, but then some other ones that perhaps are less familiar to you. So citizen science, open educational resources such as MOOCs, open peer review, which you'll see coming up on a number of different journals where peer reviews are published alongside the article and with the peer reviewer's name attached to it. And open notebooks, so open laboratory notebooks where people are publishing their day-to-day experimental results online. So open science is not only an umbrella term that happens, that involves a number of different subgroups. It's also a concept that takes different forms throughout the research lifecycle. So when you are starting to plan your research, you're acquiring data, you're cleaning data, you might be more concerned with open data, thinking about what data you need to have access to in order to verify your results, how you'll be curating your data and managing your data to ensure that it can be shared afterwards. Once you start analyzing your data and modeling your data, you might be using free and open source software more. So you'd be thinking about what software you can use, how the code you're writing can be uploaded once you've developed it. And then once you're thinking about publishing your results, you're thinking about open materials. So thinking about sharing your methodologies and then open access publications when you come to that final journal article that you're going to be writing. So open science is really a number of different things along the research lifecycle, but throughout the research lifecycle, it's a way of thinking and a way of doing. So open science is an ideology as well as a set of practical actions. And by this, I mean, open science is a commitment to the justice and the transparency and the openness of doing research in a certain way. And this translates into specific strategic research decisions that are made throughout the research lifecycle. And because of this, it's really changing the way we're thinking about responsible research. It requires buy-in and commitment, but perhaps in slightly different ways from the more traditional ways of thinking about responsible conduct of research. So open science is really a set of practices throughout the research lifecycle that changes the way we think about how to do responsible research. So we want to do it in a way that others can collaborate and contribute, and where research data, lab notes, and other research processes are freely available under terms that enable reuse, redistribution, and reproduction of the research and underlying data and methods. In this way, it becomes a practice-based ethics that links into responsible conduct of research. Open science is many things to many different people, not only because they might be working in different areas, but because there are many different reasons why people come to think of open science as a key driver in their research. There are people who want to make research more efficient, so they're trying to enhance the availability of tools and applications. There are people who want to make science more accessible to the public. There are people who want to measure scientific contributions with different ways of measuring impact. There are people who believe that access to knowledge should be is unequally distributed and want to make sure that individuals around the globe can access the same resources. And there are pragmatic people who think that research can be sped up and made more efficient if more people have access to research outputs. And all of this leads to the same thing, which is a commitment towards open science practices. So open science is also a cultural change. The products of research should be freely available to everyone to reuse and republish as they fit without restrictions, copyrights, patents, or other means of control. And because of that, it's really enhancing a a movement within research that is, where people are becoming really committed to ideas of justice, responsibility, and egalitarianism. Open science is really changing the way researchers are seeing themselves as data producers, knowledge producers, and changing the way we're thinking of ourselves as a global research community. So it's producing a cultural shift in the international research community, where people are starting to fight against any sort of restrictions that would stop their peers in different countries accessing research results. So open science is really many things. It's a lot of different activities that are all focused on sharing resources, improving awareness, creating links, removing financial barriers, and advocating for the just distribution of resources. And because of this, I like to think of openness as just an extension of responsible conduct of research. Being open allows researchers to uphold their integrity and core ethical values that underpin RCR. And it allows researchers to engage in practical activities relating to responsible conduct of research. So how do I mean this? Responsible conduct of research extends our commitments to integrity in responsible, openness allows us to extend our commitments to responsible conduct of research by allowing new avenues for just distribution of resources. It allows through making data open a way of maximizing the benefits of research. And by being transparent, it allows us to safeguard against the possible harms arising from research. By being transparent, it also allows us to improve accountability and transparency. And by sharing our research resources and research outputs, it's an enactment of the collegiality that underpins the scientific endeavor. So just to break that down into the different areas of responsible conduct of research, open data and open methodologies really speak to the ideas of transparency and reproducibility. And this helps us safeguard against research misconduct. It helps protect against the misuse of human subjects, and it also enhances data management practices. Open science tools and open educational resources improve collaboration. Open access and open publishing and open peer review enhance our commitments towards authorship and publications. Open peer review, of course, speaks directly to peer review and leads to better dialogue and collegial behavior. And open lab books and sharing and openness in general enhance the transmission of values and enhance the way that we are able to train and mentor the future generations of scientists. So open science really extends the reach of responsible conduct of research and creates new visions of the future. One of the publications that is very key to rethinking the way the future of research looks is Open Data in a Big Data World, which was authored by a number of international organizations, including CoData and RDA, who founded these data science summer schools. And I would definitely encourage you to have a read through. It's not a particularly long document, but it really outlines how open science can create a totally different way of thinking about our futures. In this way, open science is really shaping policy for the future that guides research priorities and practices. And more marginalized areas of open science, or marginal areas, not marginalized, marginal areas of open science, such as open education and open hardware, are really getting marginalized communities into research and starting to really push the boundaries of who gets to be involved and who doesn't get to be involved. So because of this, open science is really changing the way research is being done. The image on the right-hand side is a study that was done a few years ago by some researchers in the Netherlands. And they were trying to log open science tools, or tools that were enhancing open and collaborative research. And you'll see there's been a massive explosion of the number of tools that are changing the way we collaborate online, the way we share online, the way we publish online. And the way we interlink data online. Because of this, research is looking very different from what it looked like 5 or 10 years ago. But also the tools we're using are different. And the way we're linking up different areas, different disciplines, and different communities is really exciting. So what does this really mean? Big picture, open science is a cultural movement as well as a set of practices. Little picture, individual researchers can show support for open science through the way they do their science, just by thinking about openness as an extension of responsible research, can make a huge difference in the way you do your research and the way you support these values of justice, egalitarianism, transparency, beneficence, and so forth. So individuals have the ability to make changes in daily research practices to be more open in all aspects of research. But it's important to recognize, just the same as responsible conduct of research, that there's no hard and fast rule about how to be open. Openness must really work for you within your specific work context and within your daily challenges. So I think this is quite a helpful diagram because it really highlights the different areas that you can start thinking about within your research that would help you lead towards open science. So you could be thinking about how you're managing your data, how you're managing your code, where you're publishing your papers, and what you're doing with your peer reviews. And of course, this will happen at different stages of your research. So what types of things and what types of tools you're using when you're creating, documenting, using, storing, sharing, or preserving your data. So it's always important to recognize that individual openness is a number of different things, and it's not the same as just publishing any journal articles in open access journals. It's sharing your data, making sure that the research data that underpins the publications is accessible, sharing your code. So during your research, you might have developed bespoke bits of code that help you analyze or visualize your data. So thinking about sharing them once you've used them, and sharing your workflows, sharing your methodologies, talking through how you created the data that you're using, and how you analyzed your data. So, as I said, openness can mean a number of different things for a number of different people, but it also means a number of different things to individual researchers as they work in different disciplines and they work in different environments. And it's okay to be a little bit concerned about this and feel a little bit worried about how to implement openness in your own research. Openness in research is a new and expanding concept. And because of that, even the most pragmatic and old hands of open science will admit that it sometimes can be scary. And it's important to recognize it's okay to have concerns, and it's okay to realize not all the open practices will work for you. And there can be very good legal, regulatory, or ethical reasons not to share data, code, or so forth. However, it's also important to recognize that you benefit from an increasingly open research landscape. You benefit from the huge amounts of data, code, papers, educational resources that are being uploaded by willing participants in open science across the globe. And that places an obligation on you, going back to our idea of libre, not gratis. So it's important to ask, how can one avoid freeloading on the open science movement? So even if you're not ready to be an entirely open researcher, are there any obligations and responsibilities that you have to avoid you just freeloading on the movement and taking advantage of everything without contributing anything back? I've been thinking about this idea for a number of years, and it's been quite a difficult one to articulate in a specific form until I started thinking about responsible and open research as research citizenship. Now, all of you will be familiar with the idea of citizenship. You're all citizens of a specific country, or maybe two countries. And understanding your citizenship is inherently part of your understanding of your own personal self. So citizenship comes with a number of ethical obligations arising from social living. It foregrounds the idea that being part of a community requires the acceptance of civic responsibilities and contribution to the overall public good, as well as benefiting from the luxury of living in this community. So because of this, as a citizen, you have duties and expected ways of acting. You're expected to follow the rules. So you're expected to follow the speed limit. You're expected to not steal. You're expected to vote and so forth. You're expected to participate in community activities. So again, you're expected to vote. You're expected to call the police if you see something bad happening. You're expected to well, there are many ways you're expected to contribute to community activities, but you're also expected to protect the community and its resources from misuse. So you're expected not to be embezzling from the government. You're expected to be drawing awareness to instances in which people are embezzling from the government or stealing from organizations that benefit public good and so forth. So being a citizen is not only about taking advantage of living in a specific country, but it's about recognizing that an integral part of yourself as a person who's a citizen of, say, South Africa, is that you have to follow the rules, you have to participate in community activities, and you protect the community and its resources from harm. So your freedoms and your rights are not only inherent to you, but also safeguarded by your contribution to these duties. So in the same way, research is a community endeavor. It involves social actions such as resource sharing and communal practices. And because of this, I like to think of responsible researchers as citizens of a research community. And because of that, we can think of research as a citizenship give and take. So because you have the ability to benefit from the freedom of open science and the resources available online, you also have a responsibility to safeguard the structures that underpin the rights as researcher, and responsibilities to assume, you have responsibilities to protect the culture from misuse. So as a responsible and open data science citizen, you have to support and grow the culture instead of just living in it and freeloading off it. So I like to think of responsible conduct of research in open science as forming a kind of blueprint form of science citizenship. So as a citizen of a research community, you have responsibilities towards protecting resources, such as following community determined rules, such as citation, licensing, and so forth, contributing to communal resources, such as data sharing, and maximizing the good for the community by participating in civic service, such as reviewing and curating. And as you'll remember from the diagrams of responsible conduct of research, all of these areas are really inherent in the areas that RCR was talking about. So thank you for watching the second video on that. Just to wrap up, in these first two videos, we've talked about responsible conduct of research, we've talked about open science, we've talked about open science in a digital age, and we've talked about responsible and open science citizenship. In the live session, we're going to be doing some group work and some discussion exercises around what it means to be open and responsible. After we've had that session, you will have me for another session in June, in which I'll be talking about being open and responsible at home and some of the challenges of being open and responsible in low and middle income countries. So thank you for watching, and I look forward to meeting you.